Spectrum Business works with small businesses nationwide, so we know that running your own business means doing it all. Marketing, sales, inventory, customer service, and more. Spectrum One for Business helps you keep it all connected for just $49.99 a month. Get fast, reliable internet, advanced Wi-Fi with Security Shield, and a free mobile line for one low price. Stay connected and do it all with Spectrum One for Business. Only $49.99 a month. Go to spectrum.com/business to learn more. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
The most exciting part of a vacation stay at a home rental? Easy. It's being greeted upon arrival with a rusted lockbox affixed to the underside of a stranger's condo. Yeah, you simply twist knobs, click gears, jiggle it, and then rip it off its moorings, and voila! Your prize is a key to a questionable home rental and maybe tetanus. When you just want to get your vacation started by actually getting into your room, it matters where you stay. At Hilton, we deliver your key right to your phone on the Hilton Honors app. Hilton, for the stay.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's edition of the Spanish Football Podcast. If you're even remotely interested in Spanish football, you're in the right place, because that's going to be the subject of the conversation I'm going to hold with Sid Lowe over the next half an hour or so. Hello, Sydney.
Hello, Philip. How are you?
I'm all right, mate. How are you?
It's a busy day, but I'm all right. Yeah, I mean, I think I said to you yesterday, the combination of Champions League on Tuesday and weekend games is a fairly dramatic one.
If you add to that,
then Sevilla against West Ham on Thursday, and you add to that the La Liga salary caps, which came out this morning and were fairly dramatic. It's been a busy day.
Certainly has. We'll talk about that in just a moment, the La Liga salary caps. Have you managed to recover from the really quite bizarre and I'm sure quite traumatic experience this weekend of not actually watching any football on Saturday?
No. I don't think I have. I don't know how to deal with it. It turned out that I timed it rather well. Saturday's games, put bluntly, were a bit rubbish.
If you're going to miss any day of the season, it was probably this Saturday. let's run you through what's happened on match day 28 so far. There is still one game to be played, and it's Real Madrid playing tonight in the Visit Mallorca Stadium against relegation-threatened Mallorca. But on Friday night, you saw in the flesh, so you did actually manage to get to the Wanda Metropolitano to see Atletico Madrid beat Cadiz by 2-1. Then, hold on to your hats, because Saturday was a roller coaster ride. We had Levante 1, Espanyol 1, Granada 0, Elche 1, Villarreal 1, Celta 0, and Getafe 0, Valencia 0. The less said about that final game, the better. It was pretty brutal. We're calling it the Bordalásico. José Bordalás's current team, his former side. There were 39 fouls, 11 yellow cards, 9 minutes of stoppage time at the end of the second half, and no goals. Sunday was a bit better. We saw Rayo and Sevilla draw 1-1. Then Betis beat Athletic Club by 1-0. La Real beat Alaves also by 1-0. And Barca sort of salvaged things in terms of a goal-scoring perspective by thrashing Osasuna 4-0 at the Camp. Now, like I said, tonight we've got Mallorca against Real Madrid. If you do have a passing interest in Spanish football and you would like to foment your knowledge or even just listen to us chat a little bit more, come and join us at patreon.com/TSFP. Loads of content on there throughout the week, including a bonus pod each and every Thursday/Friday and a Q&A pod each and every Tuesday. Let's start off then by reflecting on the weekend. Like I said, we're not going to dwell too much on what happened on Saturday, but if there is something you want us to talk about, send us a question and we will discuss it on the Q&A pod. We'll talk about Barca because I don't want to alarm anyone, but they're actually playing pretty well, Sid. They're playing really quite good football.
Very, very well indeed. This was a really quite impressive performance against Osasuna. Not just the fact that it was 4-0, but the fact that it was done so early. They're 3-0 up after, I think it's 27 minutes. Moving the ball very well. It was interesting listening to Jagoba Arrasate, the Osasuna manager, post-game. And he said, look, they are developing an idea. And he used that lovely word that we struggle and usually fail to translate properly. They've got automatismos, you know, the mechanics, if you like, of the way that they play. He said, and they're really starting to fall into place. And he said, and they are a much more powerful team in attack. They've got much more pegada, that ability to provide the punch, he said, than the team we faced in Pamplona at the start of the season. And you can see that. You look at this is a 4-0. The game before that, they won 2-1 away, where Elche wasn't particularly great, but they scored 4 against Athletic, they scored 4 against Valencia, they drew 2-2 with Espanyol, they scored 4 against Atletico. So that's four times in their last 6 games. Mm-hmm. And you know, things are definitely falling into place. And I think you can see the ideas. I also think, of course, that you can see the work that he did in the winter transfer window and the difference that that makes to the team. But you can also see, I think, improvements in the performances of players that we doubt. So last night, for example, I don't know about you, but I thought last night was kind of like the perfect night from a Barcelona point of view, because you get Aubameyang scoring, you get everybody who hasn't really had a chance getting on the pitch and playing well. Even Martin Braithwaite was given minutes. We haven't seen him for ages. We haven't seen Clement Longley. We see Ricky Puig, who scores, and he hasn't scored, I think, for 14 months. Just the whole thing.
Ferran Torres got a brace.
Just at the time when people were starting to say, oh, are we sure that he's really a goal scorer? Because he'd missed quite a lot of chances in recent games. And so it's like the whole thing kind of fell together perfectly. The fact that he was able to take people off and rest them early. So you get Piqué taken off quickly. You get Alba taken off early. You get Aubameyang taken off so that Memphis can go on. So all the way across the pitch, this was about as good a night as it could have possibly been for Barcelona.
And yet they were coming off the back of a rather dispiriting 0-0 draw against Galatasaray on Thursday night.
Yeah, and I think that was important as well, that this was a response to that. But I think in a way the Galatasaray result, while it wasn't great, I think they could defend themselves by saying that Galatasaray played very defensively, which of course Dominic Torrent, the Galatasaray manager, who was Pep Guardiola's assistant, said, he was asked this, you know, why were you so defensive? He said, because it's Barcelona. You know, what do you want us to do? Iñaki Peña, who's on loan from Barcelona, their goalkeeper, played very well. And Xavi talked about that slight lack of intensity. And that this was, if you like, a return to that. They are, I suppose, from their point of view, the thing that's problematic is they now have to go to Turkey to win on Thursday rather than to rotate. And, of course, then they go to the Bernabeu on Sunday. Here's a question for you, Phil, just because this was a question that was asked last night. And I must admit, I couldn't believe it was even being asked, right? And yet I think my answer is the complete polar opposite to everybody else's. So maybe I'm the idiot, not them. But they were...
it's possible.
Yes, it's very likely, some would say.
It's possible.
they were asking on sort of Spanish football telly last night, you know, you've got these two games, Thursday night in Istanbul against Galatasaray, and then Sunday at the Bernabeu against Real Madrid. Where's the priority? And everyone's going, oh, it's definitely the Clásico. Of course it's not the Clásico.
Of course it's not.
I mean, how... of course it's not. I mean, look, obviously the Clásico emotionally, everything, all of that stuff. But you can win the Europa League. You cannot win La Liga. In fact, Xavi himself said post-game, even if we win at the Bernabeu, we probably won't win the league because Real Madrid would have to drop points 3 or 4 times, and that hasn't been happening this season. That is, the Europa League is not just a chance to win something with the emotional impact that that has, but it's also, of course, a way into the Champions League, which I think they'll get in La Liga now anyway. But the
emotional impact of getting knocked out of the Europa League by Galatasaray
will probably mean they wouldn't win at the Bernabeu anyway.
Yes.
Yeah.
And yeah, also, it could derail this, well, not derail this whole project, but it would be a real, real big blow. I mean, yeah. It was bad enough that they went out of the Champions League. You get knocked out of the Europa League by Galatasaray. All due respect to the Turkish giants, but that would be massive here.
Yeah, exactly. And I just couldn't, I genuinely couldn't believe it, that this was a debate, but not just a debate, but a debate in which everybody said the Bernabeu. I was like, whoa, wait a minute. Now, maybe Barcelona fans listening to us will think I'm wrong because the Madrid rivalry trumps all else, but I just don't see how it can in a developmental project. Maybe at a different time it might do, but in a developmental project with the league the way that it is, I personally think it's a no-brainer.
Okay, well, that means that there is obviously work for Xavi to do in terms of rotating and selecting his starting 11, because he's got this big game on Thursday and then a massive game on Sunday. Whichever one is bigger is up to you to decide. Sid and I have told you what we think. Who starts then on Thursday and who starts on Sunday? Does Dembélé start in both of them?
I think that Dembélé might only start in one, because I think despite everything, there may still be a nervousness about his physical fragility or potential physical fragility. Although, of course, one of the very interesting things about Dembélé is that he hasn't got injured yet, you know, touch wood and all that. And I think his role is really, really interesting, and the way that he's improved and how quickly this has been kind of normalised. I think that was always quite likely, particularly with Xavi, who's been fighting his corner against the club. And I think that's really important. I wouldn't be at all surprised if Adama plays away in Turkey and that Dembele's there on the bench to be brought on. Obviously, the one really significant change between the two games is Dani Alves, who is only registered in La Liga and not registered in the Europa League. And at the time, I said I didn't understand it. Well, I understood it, but I didn't share that decision because I think the Europa League is something you go for. And frankly, a player like Alves, I think you need. And whereas I thought they had alternatives on the right wing, so they didn't necessarily need to register Adama. And of course, I think at that point, if they weren't sure that things would go okay with them, but I think maybe they would have done it differently.
Hmm. Okay. Yeah, there are options for Xavi, and that's good for Barcelona. And he actually said after the game against Osasuna, he said, it's really difficult for me to pick the team right now, which is obviously a good thing. And it clearly is. Options all over the pitch.
Yeah, I mean, look, he said it himself. You look at the bench and there's that nice photograph when Jordi Alba and Ronald Araujo are having a joke about, well, I mean, in my imagination, it's about Dembélé because he's just misplaced a cross when it happens. But it's about something. But you look at that bench and it's them two. Adama's on there. Aubameyang is on there. Both De Jongs are on there. Piqué is on there. You think, that's a really strong bench. And you sort of look at that and think, well, so who's on the pitch? Mm. And actually on the pitch, it's true that Ricky Puig and Martin Braithwaite wouldn't normally be on the pitch. But it's still a pretty strong side out there.
Mm. Yeah, it is a pretty strong side and it's looking like a pretty strong squad as well. We'll get to the rest of the weekend's action in just a moment. But seeing as we're talking about Barcelona, let's talk about that.
Yeah.
New story of the day, the La Liga salary limits, which have been published and have caused some consternation because La Liga's salary limit is minus 144 million euros. Can you...
For Barcelona, yeah.
Sorry, but for Barcelona's limit, yes. Can you begin to explain that to us?
Yes, I sort of can. I can try. The first thing to say is Barcelona are the only club in the red. Yes. They're the only club who has a minus figure. And I think the other thing to say, and I think this is really, really important, is that, and by the way, I include myself in this, we were told and we made the assumption that because Barcelona were making savings, that Barcelona were sorting some things out and the pandemic was coming to an end, that this figure would be higher than it was last year. Was in fact, it's significantly lower. What was it last year? 93.
Yeah.
Or was it 93 or 97? I can't remember. Yeah. One of those two figures sounds right in my mind. I think it's 93.7 or 97.3, which is why I'm thinking of the two. And we thought it would go up. And we thought, you know, they'd shed a lot of salary. They, of course, come out of the pandemic, so you're getting people back into the stadium with everything that entails in terms of the merchandising, in terms of the travel, in terms of ticket sales, all of those things that the kind of peripherals that go with match day revenue. And we thought that things would be better. They are not. Now, we had a call today with like a Zoom call to explain this process. And La Liga are brilliant like this, I must admit. They're really, really good like this, explaining to us how this works. Now, the way it was explained to us was, look, the basics are that you create accounts in terms of the structural cost of your club and then the income. The structural cost is taken out of the income and whatever's left can go on the first team squad, broadly. Now, he said, look, if we really did go right down to the minutiae of this, we could be here all afternoon. But broadly, this is how it works. And so what's left you can spend on your squad. So if you have a huge debt, then it tilts the other way and you have nothing to spend on your squad. You're not allowed to spend anything at all. Now, so people will say, how on earth will Barcelona buy people and how on earth were they able to buy people last year and in the winter window when they're over budget? Because, as I believe we've explained before, but I will try and do again in the simplest possible terms, what the league did essentially was say, we cannot be putting our clubs in a position in which they cannot build a squad. Mm-hmm. They cannot build a team because these are fundamentally still football clubs, even if we want the economic good health. So we allow a process that says those teams that are above budget, in other words, they do not have the salary, they can't be within the salary limit because the amount they're spending on salaries is already above the limit. We will allow them to spend if they demonstrate to us that they are making savings. And the way to do that is to allow them to spend a percentage of the savings. In other words, and what they do is they do what's basically a 4-to-1 ratio. So they say, if you save 10 million, you can basically invest 2.5 million in players with one or two small caveats. And the really big caveat is, if you release a player, I must confess, forgive me, I can't remember the exact percentage, whose salary, that player alone, is beyond, I think it was 5% of your budget, you can spend up to 50% of the saving you've made. In other words, you have to demonstrate to us that you're saving, and we will continue to allow you to do this. Okay. Now, of course, that doesn't solve the underlying problem. Well, it does a bit, because you are still saving, so you're chipping away at the imbalance between income and outgoings. Now, obviously, fundamentally, you still have to attend to that, and it will not be positive again in Barcelona's point case until there is some sort of additional income. Now, the way it was put to us today, and I think this is a very interesting way of looking at this, and I wonder if this foreshadows something, a very, very significant and I think very concerning debate. And he said there are essentially two ways that Barcelona can attack that underlying problem. One, of course, is with superavit, what do you call that in English? Surpluses, with money coming in, basically. So that's through player sales. Maybe you, as Real Madrid did many years ago, of course, famously sell the training ground. Maybe you have some sort of property that you sell. Maybe you get money in somehow. So, for example, Barcelona are currently talking to CVC about a deal there. Or, he said, the other thing that some clubs have available to them is an ampliación de capital, which is essentially a share issue. Now, of course, Barcelona, as a members club, do not have that option. And as soon as he said that, a light bulb, well, I wouldn't even call it a light bulb, I'd call it more like a kind of a fear, kind of pinged in my mind. Like, wow, is this where the membership model debate becomes real again? And of course, we saw that Barcelona's CEO walked away, what was it, 2 months ago? And that one of the things that we believe that he didn't see eye to eye with Joan Laporta over was about the membership model itself.
So is this the first, this is the first step?
This would be the first step, because of course you only go to a change in membership model with an income of private capital in some way if you can justify it through the argument, which would be, look, we're going out of business here.
Joan Laporta has been pretty bullish previously about Barcelona buying players and making big signings, not least about Erling Haaland, and suggesting that it could be done, suggesting that it's being worked on, suggesting that it's far from beyond them, until a couple of days ago where he's backtracked quite a lot and he said that we're not going to do operations that will put the club at risk. They're not going to be signing Erling Haaland this summer, I think it's fair to say.
Well, it sounds very much like they're not. I mean, in fairness, I suppose he left a slight door open that he's saying we won't do operations that put us in trouble. I do think there is a sensible structure in place, although we did talk about this in the winter window, that there are short-term questions, which is how do you get through the criteria now, and long-term questions about what kind of problem do you load yourself up with. I was talking to someone at the club the other day about this, and the idea of amortizations, and of course, how do you afford to pay for someone now? Well, because you spread the cost. The problem is, of course, that you spread the cost into following years, which means you've got a problem in following years. Now, if you manage carefully, then you would like to think, OK, you can trust them to not load that debt into a position where they can't deal with it. But, of course, they're also dealing with debt, which has been loaded into this year, which it shouldn't have been. And so there is that doubt. Now, with Haaland, of course, now what they would have to do would be to make significant enough changes that they could cover his cost. Now, remember, his cost spread over time. So let's say, for argument's sake, he signs and it costs, what is it? I think it's 70 million, isn't it? The signing on fee. It's the actual transfer fee is set, I think, as 70 million in terms of the release fee that Dortmund want. So let's say, for argument's sake, you do 70 million over, let's say it's 5 years. Okay. So you spread that across 5 years. You can deal with that if you make sufficient amounts of changes in the meantime. But then you've also probably got to pay agency costs. You've probably got to pay a signing on fee for him, and you've got to deal with his wages. And that has to be paid at that time. So the savings you make will have to be very big. Now, they have been big up to a point. And because you've got the potential of a signing for Griezmann, you've got the potential of a signing for Coutinho, you've already shed some of these people. And this was one of the other things, by the way, and I think it's worth pointing this out. I'm actually going to look it up, because I thought, I was handwriting as we were being spoken to today, the way in which Barcelona were able to do some of the signings in the winter was, of course, because Umtiti's contract was changed.
It was.
Kun Agüero disappeared. Coutinho represented a very significant sale. And then the players they bought in came in on very low salaries and amortised over a period of time. So they were able to get through, if you like, those hoops. Now, the big thing is, as I say, there's a difference between can you get through the hoops And can you manage this over a period of time? And the league CEO today basically said, he was asked, can they sign Haaland? And he said, quite clearly, right now, unless something changes, and if there is nothing new done to reduce the costs and increase incomes, there is no other way of doing it except for that.
Listen, I'm quite happy that we've managed to get through about a 10-minute section on the podcast, essentially talking about maths and it making sense. So well done. You've done
yes,
very well.
Yeah, that's quite a surprise, isn't it?
Proud of you. Good. All right, that's Barca, and that's
just one thing to throw okay. in here. I just do think this is worthwhile. It was a question that was posed to Javier Gomez, the guy from La Liga. There are 20 clubs in the first division.
There are
14 of them are over limit at the moment. So 14 of them, in order to buy. Are doing this ratio of 4-1 thing because they can't actually buy within their limits. But Barcelona is the only one with a negative limit for next season. Mm. So in other words, to even get on an even keel, they have to find €144 million from somewhere.
When you put it like that, it's yeah.
I mean, it really is that simple. It really is that simple. And this, by the way, let's not forget this, and it's really important. This is with them having already taken pretty serious emergency measures to deal with this. It should not be forgotten that Suarez went, that Arturo Vidal went, that Ivan Rakitic went, that the following summer Griezmann went, Lionel Messi went. I mean, we forget this quite easily, but their best player ever went because they couldn't afford him. And I just want to throw that in there because I think there is sometimes this argument says, well, oh, they just get away with it, they just kind of keep doing it, look, they're signing people, how can they do this? Well, that's not really fair, because they were forced or chose to release players who are potentially very important, and in the case of Messi, about as traumatic a departure as you could imagine.
It's true. Very traumatic for everyone, I think, and the trauma is still there, particularly for Messi, I think. Let's move on and talk about some other stuff. You were at the Wanda on Friday night to see Atletico Madrid beat Cadiz 2-1 in the pissing rain. You're a hero, Sydney. Well done for going. It wasn't great from Atleti at all. I mean, scored after 3 minutes, wasn't it? João Félix taking advantage of a gift from the goalkeeper. And that was it from Atleti in the first half. And Cadiz equalised through Álvaro Negredo on the stroke of half-time, deservedly so. And it was just really poor. Yeah, Rodrigo de Paul scored in the second half and Atleti got the win, but I don't know. I mean, maybe the positive for Atletico was that they didn't play well and they still managed to win. And that is something that they've not been doing this season. When they've been playing badly, they haven't won games, and they did. But I don't know. I really was really unconvinced by this.
Yeah, absolutely. So was I. And also, look, this brings us to, if you like, a recurring theme that we've tried to engage with all year and tried to explain all year. And sometimes we've come up short. We've had reasons and we've been able to give some explanation for Atletico Madrid's poor form. But at times we've sort of said, look, some of the underlying statistics are not so bad. And I genuinely think it's not too much of a step to say that in these last four games, when Atletico Madrid have won four in a row, they have played significantly worse than in periods earlier in the season when they weren't winning games. In terms of the number of chances they've taken, in terms of how well they've kept the ball, in terms of how they've dominated the game. Now, they are maybe doing some of those intangibles better than before. But even that, I'm not entirely sure if it's true. You know, they were defensively, you know, you could say, oh, well, they were really good this time around. But were they, or did they just get away with it? Jimenez clears one off the line. There's a couple of Oblak saves. There's a couple of reasonable chances not taken. And you sort of think, well, there's been times earlier in the season when it's one chance, bang, and it's in and it falls apart. And there is maybe a degree of, if you like, intensity and concentration that maybe wasn't there before. But I don't know if I'm partly seeing that because of the results rather than because I'm really seeing it, if you see what I mean. And I think sometimes we look at the results and we go, okay, let's explain this. And sometimes we have to try and force ourselves to not look at the results to explain things, or maybe not to explain, but to describe what we're seeing. And I watched it on Friday, and I'm complete with you. I thought, I've seen them play miles better than this and not win.
Yes.
And quite a lot of times as well.
I mean, they played miles better.
So I don't know the answer.
They played miles better against Manchester United and drew 1-1. Obviously, Man United are not Cadiz, but I'm talking about Man U because they play them tomorrow, Sydney. How confident are we that Atleti are going through?
I don't know.
Literally, anything can happen.
Exactly. That's exactly where I was going. I was going to say, I'm not confident, but nor am I not confident. because I sort of look at this and I think, yeah, maybe. Yeah, maybe not. I think they will try and play on the break. I think that Simeone has very clearly not given up on Suarez, but taken a decision that we need to be quicker. And there needs to be more dynamism about us. And that's one thing that maybe you can look at this and see. And yet that said, they scored in the second half in this game and it was a brilliant goal. And Suarez plays an absolute decisive role in it. And it's a really nice move. And this is one of, I mean, I watched Suarez on Friday and I thought he looked, you know, we've watched Suarez do this for a long time now. And you sort of go, he looks like he can hardly run. He looks like it hurts him. And then he comes to life and he scores the goal and you win the game. And I watched him on Friday. I thought it was another step again. But then maybe that's because of inactivity. Maybe that, you know, maybe it becomes self kind of perpetuating, if you see what I mean. So against Manchester United, the short answer is I honestly do not know what to say to you. I really don't.
I don't think any of us have any idea what to expect from the game. Tomorrow, Manchester United 1, Atletico Madrid 1 on aggregate. From a Spanish football perspective, we're hoping Atletico Madrid go through, but we really have no idea. Also in action, in European action this week, are Sevilla in the Europa League against West Ham, as you mentioned. They saw their title push perhaps coming to an end this weekend with their 1-1 draw at Rayo. It's their sixth draw in 8 games.
Yeah.
That's why they are no longer realistic title contenders. And producer Al's put here, forget challenging for Madrid for the title. Are we sure they'll finish in the top four?
Top four, I think they will, but I don't think they're going to finish second anymore. Well, no, maybe that's a step too far to say I don't think they are. I think there's a very strong chance that they don't now because the momentum that Barcelona have gathered, the fact
it's in
that
Barca's
Barcelona
hands,
are,
by the way, because they've still got a play Sevilla and they've got a game in hand. So if they win those two games, they go above Sevilla. Yeah,
so the game in hand takes them to 2 points. And if they beat, that said, the game against Sevilla is at the Pizjuan. I also think that Sevilla
is
possibly
it?
More than Barcelona. I think so, isn't it? Or is it the other way around?
The other way
maybe
around.
Maybe I've got it wrong way.
Yeah,
okay.
The camp now.
Okay. Is it? Okay. The other thing is, I wonder, and despite what we said at the start of the programme, is the Europa League more of a distraction for Sevilla than it would be for Barcelona in terms of, if you like, the emotional connection to it, if not necessarily the capacity to play it? And also, I suppose, the management of resources, because one of the things that we've seen with Sevilla, and I wonder if maybe I was too generous to them in that we kept saying during January and February where they were just about hanging on, we sort of said, yeah, but it's a miracle they're standing at all and they've done a brilliant job given the number of injuries that have been 8 or 9 almost every week. And then you sort of think they come for it, they get out of the African Cup of Nations, 3 players back, 2 of them vital, of course, Bono and Enesiri, at least theoretically vital. As it turns out, Munir has probably been more important than either of those two since they came back, which is not what I anticipated, if only because he scored in Europe in midweek and, of course, because he scored in the derby. And you think, right, we get these guys back, 2 or 3 of the other guys come back, and then we start watching them and thinking they can step up again now. And at exactly that point, they either didn't or couldn't. And so right now, yeah, I would say I think Barcelona are more likely to finish second than Sevilla.
There are Sevilla fans in Seville who are deeply unhappy with Julian Lopetegui. Like really, really not happy with,
and they,
with
the and yet design. They weren't 3 weeks ago after the derby. It went the other way, and I'd had this conversation with some Sevilla fans. That sort of sense that sometimes do they just not kind of take that step they need to take, and then when they did it in the derby and they really went for Betis right from the start, you thought, here we go, this is the moment that says, all right, we're going to do this now. Not necessarily win the league, but you know, we're going to go for this. We're going to really do this, and it didn't happen again. And I don't know if that is... I mean, sometimes I watch Sevilla, and I don't know about you, but I sometimes get the feeling that Sevilla know that, and this is, I know, a contradiction because I've just been talking about injuries. They know that physically they're quite strong. They know that they're very well organised. They know that they can keep the ball really quite well, because I actually think their structure is really good and they use the ball really well. And I sometimes wonder if they sort of trust too much that the chance will come rather than forcing it. Do you know what I mean? Rather than really going and getting it. And they sort of trust that, well, it'll happen, which is, I think this is borne out, and you're the man with the stats, and more often than not, you get the stats that I haven't got, or you tell me the stats that I don't know. It feels very much like Sevilla get to half-time too often having not scored, but maybe trusting that they will. and maybe they don't need to. Or maybe they, or more to the point, maybe they need to approach that first half differently sometimes.
I can tell you what the table would look like if we only counted the first half.
Ah, well, there we go. That's a perfect example of this stat. Please tell me I'm not talking total nonsense there.
Betis would be top. Sevilla would be fifth. Betis would be top. Villarreal second. Real Madrid third. Barcelona fourth. Sevilla would be fifth. You've got to focus on Sevilla against West Ham now. You're not going to the game, are you?
No, I'm not, no.
Okay, that's good. But turn your attentions to that after tonight's game, of course, and after... It is a busy week, isn't it? And after Atletico Madrid at Old Trafford. Really, really busy week as well. You've got to try and keep your eyes on Oviedo as well. They beat title-chasing Real Valladolid 3-0 yesterday, was it, Sydney?
We are amazing. It is impossible to work out what the bloody hell is going on with Real Oviedo.
Well, I've tried. Because... But, you know, Lord knows I've tried.
I mean... You know, you, it's endless. Ah, oh, really big team. Boom, take them out. Here we go. We can do it. Play someone else. I refuse to get excited now. I've just had enough. Whatever will be and all that. Because I just don't think there's any point in believing.
Elsewhere in the Segunda, there is no point in believing. Title of today's pod.
Just in general.
Eibar are 3 points clear at the top of the Segunda. They beat Amorebieta 1-0. They're ahead of Almeria, who drew 3-3 with Lugo. Quick mention as well about Barca Femini, who beat Real Madrid 5-0 on Sunday to clinch the league title in front of a record 5,430 crowd at the Estadi Johan Cruyff. Their record so far this season, played 24.
It's unreal.
124. 136 goals for, 6 goals against. They've won the last 3 league titles and they've won 7 since 2011. They are the best side in Spain, the best side in Europe. And utterly, utterly dominant here and well worthy of their title crown. We've got a big Champions League Clásico between Barcelona and Real Madrid coming up in a couple of weeks' time at a sold-out Camp Nou, which is going to be pretty special.
It's going to be quite exciting. I suppose there is a broader question now, which is about how the rest of the clubs in Spain respond to this, and in particular, obviously, those with the resources to do so. So whether Atletico and Real Madrid in particular, how they respond to this.
As we said this week, it's really busy in terms of Spanish sides in action. Tuesday, it's Man United, Atleti in the Champions League. Wednesday, it's Juve against Villarreal in the same competition. Then on Thursday, it's Galatasaray, Barca, Eintracht Frankfurt, Betis and West Ham against Sevilla. If there's something that we didn't talk about and you want us to, send us a question and we will talk about it on tomorrow's Q&A pod. Enjoy the week's football and see you on patreon.com/TSFP. If not, if you don't want to become a patron, that's all right. We'll be here next week as ever. Adios.
Cheerio.